Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comic book, manga, and graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Mick.
Hello!
And Andrew.
So tired.
Well, that basically answers my next question, which was going to be, how are you?
I don't hurt his work all the time. But it was Loki, wasn't it? He was the one who first started telling children, oh no, you should grow up, it's going to be great. Spend all your childhood waiting to the point where you're an adult and have fun. Not fun. It's work. It's constant work until you die.
Have you been teaching students again?
I should do seminars.
Go around the country.
Spin a chair around, sit down in it like a cool person, light up a cigarette. But it's going to be one of the scared straight things, but for adult life.
Yes. Your version of life forward would be amazing.
I think that's an old person thing. I don't know what it is.
It's just a name I came up with for some kind of spurious self-help thing.
All right, so we were supposed to find something that you made up amusing without any frame of reference. Well, is that what you're telling us?
Life forward, you know, bring your life forward. It sounds like something one of those American self-help people would say.
Yeah, but without having the context of the rest of your brain.
Moving on to the news.
Yeah, I'm in control of the news today, so Mick, throw the ball to you. And like dodging away.
Ah, right. So you want me to cover the big grown-up news?
I do want you to cover the big fancy adult person news.
So, in a situation that very rarely, in fact, I'm not sure it's ever occurred before, just prior to us recording tonight's podcast, the Black Panther movie got coverage on the BBC 6 o'clock news. Ooh.
See, I'm surprised by this. I know it's not the first time comic books have been covered on the BBC News, because I remember there was the big hoo-ha about the death of Superman, because, yeah, that was going to last.
Yeah, but, I mean, predictably, the reason for the coverage is that it's the premiere tonight.
Yeah.
It's almost like superhero movies are some kind of gigantic industry now that brings in billions of dollars.
But we didn't get a 6 o'clock news bulletin coverage of Thor Ragnarok. Or Wonder Woman. Or Justice League.
No, we didn't.
But we got it for Black Panther. And why, I hear you ask?
Is it because it's ethnic minorities?
It's because of its predominantly black cast, yes. and obviously it's seen as a cultural milestone.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of interviews with people involved in the making of the film, people who run organisations that support ethnic diversity work. And the news is that there is a lot of crowdfunding going on around the world to raise money to send kids in impoverished black communities to be able to go see Black Panther on the big screen, to be inspired by the fact that, yes, this is a movie for you.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
But what I want to know is, where is the Kickstarter campaign for us poor middle class but too lazy to buy things campaign?
And
just because buying tickets is effort and we're quite lazy and
that crowdfunder closed yesterday, Andrew.
Oh no, did it?
Yeah. If only you'd have asked last week.
Curse my lack of foresight.
I know.
Okay, then where's my Kickstarter for white middle class lazy people who also missed out on the Kickstarter for the first one?
You'll have to start that one up yourself, I'm afraid.
That's doing things.
Meanwhile, I've got my tickets booked.
You can always set up a GoFundMe page, you know, GoFundMe to watch the Black Panther movie.
No, but Rob, the key point you're missing here is that then I would have to do a thing, and that would kind of negate my not wanting to have to do a thing in the first place. Doing a different thing does not make it better.
Yeah, the idea here is that... Oh, actually, Andrew, if someone does set up that crowdfunder, right, for you to not book tickets to go see Black Panther, how do you actually go to see the film?
Well, no. It's not that I don't have the tickets. It's that I'm not the one buying them.
Yeah, but...
If they're the ones who buy the tickets, and then maybe they can pick me up in the car, and but then I'm still going to get ready. My house and set a private cinema screening.
I've got the perfect answer for you, Andrew. You don't have to do a thing. Literally, you do not have to go and do a thing. On Tuesday evening, I will go to the cinema and watch the film for you.
I mean, that almost works.
See, I think what Andrew's saying is that he doesn't have enough servants.
Yes, that's it. I need a crowdfunding for more servants.
Yeah.
God, could you imagine? I really want to make that Kickstarter now just to see what happens.
It's funny, actually. I said to someone earlier today, I would love to put up a big advertising campaign that said, right now, for just £5 a month, I guarantee to provide you with absolutely nothing and see how many people signed up.
You know people are going to sign up for that.
I know, on the basis that they'll think, well, you must get something.
Exactly. The thing is, you know there's a court case waiting to happen there as well.
So, yes, it's great that people are using this Black Panther launch to get kids who would not normally get a chance to see a movie to see it up there on the big screen. So if you've got a few bob and you can spare it to one of these crowdfunding campaigns, why not do it? You'll feel like a better person.
See, I was joking earlier, but generally everyone should invest in that because it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't mean to play devil's advocate here.
But you're going to.
Yes, I am. Okay. Are these underprivileged kids in, say, the Western world? Are these
some of them are, yeah.
Some of them are underprivileged kids in, say, Africa.
Well, you know, I mean... Mark,
you're going to know something wild.
What?
Africa have cinemas now.
They
no,
do.
No, no,
yeah.
I'm talking about the mass starvation is more of an issue than going to see the Black Panther movie.
Well, yeah, I do think that, you know, they're not raising these funds so that it's a choice between go see this movie or eat.
Yeah, I know that. I'm just saying, you know.
But
just throwing it out there.
It's very easy to give kids who are in impoverished communities, there's always something going on to try and get them food or to get them education or to get, but this is something to just give them the chance to sit in a cinema and go, wow.
Yeah. And I applaud that. I think that's a great thing. I'm just playing devil's advocate, as I said, because somebody out there will basically say, well, that's all well and good, but what about this? And I'm just
but they're the same kind of person. They're the same kind of person who doesn't realize that this is a once in a lifetime thing. The first predominantly black superhero movie will only get released at the cinema once.
I mean, unless it gets re-released.
Yeah, that I was about to say.
It will only get released for the first time once. Okay?
The only reason I'm saying that is because how many times have we seen the original director's cut of the director's cut of, say, Blade Runner or Alien or something like that?
Ah, but each one of those is a significantly different film. It says so on the back of the Blu-ray box.
One of them only had like an extra 20 seconds added.
But that 20 seconds changed the entire message behind the film, didn't you think?
No.
Especially when you realised it was an extra 20 seconds of credits.
Exactly.
But no, I think that there are ongoing opportunities to help provide people with food and shelter and clean water, but there is only a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that you can contribute to something that lets a child go, wow.
I agree with you. And you understand why I was playing devil's advocate, because those questions are going to be asked and somebody has to retort to them.
Well, I think those questions will be asked.
A northeast-based, predominantly white comedy podcast.
Yes, but we are literally two-thirds white.
I mean,
I would also suggest that our listeners are better than that.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Andrew's math, 2.5/3. I'm still trying to figure that one out.
I mean, in my mind, the half a third is kind of the creamy chocolate coating.
Well, that's 2.5 and 3/6, obviously.
White nougat inside of Rob.
Yeah, it's true. It's so white in there.
Anyway. Is there any more news as I desperately try and divert conversation away from the contents of Rob's innards?
Well, we were talking about movies, so let's stick with movies. Trailers have been out.
You said I could do the news, Rob. You've stolen my news.
I haven't stolen the news. I've just given you an opportunity to speak up now.
No, I'm good, thanks.
See? Making me feel guilty for nothing. Anyway, trailer for Deadpool 2. We finally get to see Cable in action. complete with his green screen arm before it gets all the metallic luster put on.
They've put that in the trailer?
The trailer that I saw, yeah.
Yeah, and the trailer that you watched as well, Mick, before the show.
No, because I didn't get time. I didn't get time to watch the trailer because I was watching the Black Panther news story, what I've just covered. Because I, too, was doing that awful, terrible adult thing of doing work for the rest of the day.
True.
Well, for those of you at home who haven't seen the trailer, and perhaps maybe we deliberately set this up so in now explaining to Mick, I can explain to all of you as well. That's good. They'll definitely buy that.
That anyway, was seamless. They'll never notice.
Anyway, yes, the trailer has, like, a very fun joke where Cable strides out and you just see one of his arms is painted green. And then Deadpool stops the trailer to yell at the special effects guy. And it includes the line, "What do you mean the special effects aren't finished? It's not like we're trying to remove a mustache."
Oh, brilliant.
It's superb.
Brilliant.
Thing is, you can tell just from the trailer that this is going to be a fun film. Lots of action, lots of explosions, nobody taking things too seriously.
I mean, there's a whole bit where Deadpool reenacts one of the scenes from the films using action figures and quoting Toy Story.
Exactly. Oh, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I reckon this is going to outdo the first Deadpool film because the relationship between Deadpool and Cable in the comics is kind of amazing.
Well, I think what I said a while ago and what I'm still hoping is the case is that Deadpool is basically a fun film, but one that had to play a bit safe to convince the producers to get it made. And now that it has been just ridiculously successful, they've got more of a reign to just do what they want.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's what we see in Deadpool 2. Also, what we might see in Deadpool 2 is X-Force.
Yes.
It's only a very brief snippet that you see in the trailer, but it's Deadpool and Domino with a few other people behind them stepping out of an airplane. And of course, everyone on the internet has paused that scene and is throwing out all manner of theories as to who's who.
Is Shatterstar
in there? Yes, Rob. Shatterstar might be one of the people in the background. And it's funny because his name makes it sound like he pooped out a star. Well done, Rob. You win the prize.
Hey, I like that.
My content.
I think I've spotted now why so few of our news articles make it onto the big grown-up news.
I know, it's my fault. And I already had your contempt. I didn't need to win it again, Andrew.
And yet you still do these things.
It's because they amuse me. I need more amusement in my life. Anyway.
Anyway, also on the team is Cable's friend, possibly Cable's friend, the ridiculously named George Washington Bridge, who is a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent or something. But more importantly, also is going to be played by Terry Crews.
Yes. Yes. That works for me.
But I'd be happy if he's just playing Terry Crews.
Yeah, but Terry Crews playing George Washington Bridge is just all kinds of right.
Actually, if Terry Crews can play a man named Hail Caesar, he can play a man named George Washington Bridge.
I agree.
And then there's also one other guy on the team who some people are saying maybe Chamber because he's got his lower mouth covered. But another theory I saw, which I think is more likely, is that he might be playing a very obscure X-Force character called Zeitgeist, who can vomit acid.
Oh, yeah, that's a possibility.
That just seems very much like the kind of character that would appear in a Deadpool film.
Yeah.
And usually I would say, but no, he's far too obscure to appear, but also Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Yeah, this is true.
Which I don't know that she just made it into the film because the creators of Deadpool looked down the list of just X-Men character names and went, that's cool. We're going to have that character.
Yes. And this time she's not got the Sinead O'Connor look.
She doesn't. She's rocking the whole faux hawk thing.
It's like a quiff, isn't it?
It is. It's like a quiff mohawk.
A quiff hawk.
And quite frankly, I dig it.
Yes. Mick, you should get one of those. I think you'd look cool in it.
Been there, done that.
That's right. Mick was around in the 80s.
It was his junior biker days.
What people don't realise, and I try not to reveal too often, is I am, in fact, Mr. T.
That's why you're always eating.
That's right. It's also why I'm always introducing Rob to my friend Payne.
Well, unless he goes to a different country. Wait a minute, you went to Dubai, Mick.
Yeah, you got on a flight.
Exactly.
Did I go by plane? Did I?
Oh, yes, you definitely did.
And don't forget, I didn't go on my own. So someone may have given me a spiked drink before we went.
I bet it was Murdoch, wasn't it?
It would be hilarious if you actually had a colleague whose surname was Murdoch.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
But I mean, you can confirm it because you did just confirm that you are Mr. T.
Yes. Yeah,
I can neither confirm nor deny whether Murdoch was with me.
Anyway, leaving that to one side.
But if we can find him, then you can something the A-team.
If you're in trouble and no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can call the A-team. Oh, good grief.
I know.
Where are your cultural cornerstones, for crying out loud?
They're in the 1990s and early 2000s, Mick.
No, don't lie, Andrew.
I'm not old.
Your cultural cornerstones are buried firmly in comic books.
You say that, but firstly, A, I didn't get into comics until fairly late. And B, I did watch a lot of the A-team growing up.
I think what Andrew's just done there is destroyed his own argument.
This is true.
Which is a foolish thing to do. Pity the fool!
Oh, he built
it up. Is it a foolish thing? Or perhaps by defeating myself, I remain unbeaten?
No, because you were beaten by yourself. Don't ever let Deadpool get hold of that line.
Too late.
Is there any more news?
Yes, there is.
Yes, there is. We've got another trailer to talk about for a real film that actually exists and is happening. It's the Venom trailer.
Yes, no matter how much you want to deny it, Andrew, Venom is a film now.
It sure is. Sure is a film about Tom Hardy, and it's got some black veiny things running up his neck.
Tom Hardy lying on a bed going, "Rawr!"
And we all have our own demons.
Oh, yes.
That's a thing they actually say.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no.
And I don't know what to say. I didn't like the fact that they kept doing the behind the guy walking in a hoodie shot in the trailer. That kind of annoyed me.
Yeah, it is a mid-budget sci-fi horror film.
Yeah, and they always have that shot just to show that it's, you know, something dark and gritty and broody.
Yeah, and the shots of people in the hazmat suits walking around a crashed alien ship.
Yeah.
And a man on a hospital bed doing some screaming.
Oh, and they open the truck up and there's this canister with something inside it.
And even worse, it's black gloop.
Yep.
Which I know that's what the Venom symbiote is, but it doesn't look that impressive.
Nope.
It could be just leftover props from an episode of The X-Files.
Probably is. And of course, we don't actually see Venom in it.
No, you don't.
Which, I don't know, I'm looking around people who say it's probably because they haven't finished the CGI yet.
It's true.
Which, I mean, fair enough, but also the Venom movie.
Yeah, but they use that.
I kind of want to see Venom.
Yeah.
the CGI isn't quite finished yet. It was a story that we heard from Inhumans, but it turned out they were lying.
Yeah, but we also heard it from Deadpool too. And they weren't lying. They were, you know, yeah, Deadpool complaining about it.
And also, I guess it might be that they want to, like, save Venom for some kind of big reveal.
Yeah.
But
save Venom for some kind of big reveal in a film called Venom.
Yeah. About that character that everyone already knows what he looks like.
Right.
Yes. Venom, it's basically Black Spider Hulk with tentacles.
Maybe that's the twist. Maybe it's actually Carnage. It's not Venom at all.
Oh, boy. Well done on making the film worse, Mick.
Well, if I make it worse now, maybe when it comes out, it'll feel better.
Or maybe they've pranked us all, and it's not actually a film about Venom, the character. It's a film about Bane from Batman, because he uses that thing called Venom to make himself stronger, doesn't he?
Is this the option?
It's the DC Marvel crossover that no one wanted. Another one.
Think about it. Bane's mask in the Batman comics looks remarkably similar to Venom's face at times, doesn't it?
I mean, they are both played by Tom Hardy.
Exactly.
What if he does actually do his Bane voice?
Oh my God, is this the second part of the Tomspiracy?
It is. That in every single thing that Tom Hardy's going to be in from now on, he's just going to do the Bane voice.
I'm not even going to attempt it because my attempts at the Bane voice are horrible.
To be fair, so are Tom Hardy's.
True.
That's because you merely adopted the Bane voice. Oh, I'm born it.
I have no idea what you just said.
And that's the problem with the Bane voice.
That's why it's the most accurate Bane impression.
This is true. Oh, I want to watch this movie.
Yeah, I maybe should have thought out the fact that the only way to do the Bane voice is to put your hand in front of your mouth, which does make it slightly difficult to pick up on a microphone.
All right, it sounded pretty accurate from this side. I actually want to see this movie now just to see if that is actually the case. If the character of Venom is going around screaming as if it's Tom Hardy wearing something over his gob.
We've done it. We've fixed Venom.
Just give him a great big pacifier.
Yes. I mean, he is sort of like Spider-Man's son.
Yes. And we know from, like, The Simpsons, we've seen how evil Maggie gets when you remove the pacifier. And she killed Mr. Burns. Well, no, shot him, not killed him.
Yeah, you thought you'd outsmarted a Venom film, but we figured it out.
I do realise there's a whole group of filmmakers now just going, oh, Christ, if only we really were that clever.
See, we have a habit of fixing Marvel and DC.
In a way that they can't think of themselves.
No. Anyway.
Possibly they haven't had enough blows to the head.
Possibly. Was there any more news?
Yep. 2000 AD will be releasing their summer anthology of sci-fi stories soon. And this is going to be the first year where it's going to be written by an all-female creative team.
Wow.
Yep, so the 48-page special will exclusively feature the work of women, including Alex DeCampi, Katie Rex, Tilly Walden, and it'll be drawn, with covers by female artists like Tula Lote and Emily Ziner.
I've met her, Tula Lote.
Genuinely?
Yeah, genuinely.
Oh, cool.
I've got a run of Supreme Rose, Supreme Blue Rose, signed by her.
Wow. So, this is a pretty big deal, isn't it?
It is, because this is something you probably mentioned more on Literary Livestream.
Yeah.
The world of sci-fi is still very heavily dominated by just white men.
Oh, God, yes.
I think anything like this that helps diversify it even a bit definitely deserves to be applauded.
It does. I will be placing a pre-order now.
Well, at least wait until... All right, we've got a show to do first, Nick.
I was going
to
say, wait until we take a break.
No, the rest of the show can go hang. I'm showing my solidarity.
It's true. Let's take a break there so Mick can go place his order.
I'm Christopher Sabat, voice of Alex Louis Armstrong, the Strong Arm Alchemist. And you're listening to The Geek Show, which has been passed down the Armstrong line for a generation or two.
50 copies, special limited edition, £3,000. Done. What do you mean that's a fake website?
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out The Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week and do it reasonably well.
The Geek Show is the largest independent podcast network out there. And to be independent, we need a little bit of help every now and again. So if you want something to show your love of The Geek Show, head over to thegeekshow.co.uk, click on the shop and buy some of our lovely wares.
Hi, and welcome back to 4Panel. It's now that important bit where we talk to you about things what we've read and looked at. Starting with Andrew.
Yep, that's who I is. And I have been reading Tales to Astonish, which is a Marvel sort of anthology collection. Basically, this is three comics from the 1990s, I think it was 1994 and 1995, with the idea being all three of them have art that's been painted rather than just done the other way. I know what technical terms for things are. Spoiler alert, no, I don't. But anyway, yeah, the idea is this was... These were kind of made after Marvels came out, which was written by Kurt Busiek with art by Alex Ross. I think that was one of the first comics to feature like full-on painted interiors. And so Marvel released these kind of as a way to capitalize on that success.
Okay.
And also what they are is their revivals, kind of some of Marvel's earlier series. So you have, like the cover says, Tales to Astonish, but also Tales of Suspense and Strange Tales. And I like that, yeah, each story in this features the characters who debuted in that series. So like Tales of Suspense, you've got Captain America and Iron Man. Tales to Astonish, you've got Ant-Man, the Wasp, and the Hulk.
Okay.
And Strange Tales, you've got the Thing, the Human Torch, and Doctor Strange.
And is it the old school Human Torch that first appeared in?
No. This is still Johnny Storm.
All right. Because I know that in the either Strange Tales or Tales to Astonish that first introduced the Human Torch, he was actually a robot or android.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if it was one of those that introduced the first Human Torch. So I think that like, all three of these started in the 1950s.
Yeah, they did. Human
Torch was before Marvel was even Marvel. Back when it was timely.
Yeah. But yeah, the first Human Torch was an android.
Was. Which makes his code name really weird.
He was an android and the flame effect was an accidental byproduct.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to happen.
So he should have been the humanoid torch rather than the Human Torch.
I mean, unlike the idea of the world where his powers didn't work at all, and he just fought crime as the definitely human man.
The man man.
Certainly no robotic parts here. Oh, wink.
Oh no, it's time for me to perform. Let me take one of my blue pills.
Anyway, also what I found interesting in this book... it's just the way it's so heavily focused on showing off the art. Like, the story's really only there to, like, set up situations to provide nice, big, colourful pages for the art. And I think that's interesting because it's completely different to how comics are now, where the writing seems like the main thing and the art's kind of just a secondary byproduct.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think that's something we're guilty of on this show as well, is focusing more on the writing than the art.
This is true.
As I'm about to show why we do this by saying, yeah, the art's good, I like it. But yeah, just to run through them. Tales to Astonish itself, it is quite fun. But it's written by Peter David with art by John Estes. I say they're like a Hank Pym and the Wasp go on holiday to Norway and end up meeting up with the Hulk. And they have to fight a guy who kind of gets possessed by Loki's spirit and tries to bring about Ragnarok. That's cool because it's like a whole series of big... of classical paintings, like, you know, you've got giant wolves and serpents and sort of old-fashioned looking gods.
See, that sounds more like a picture book rather than an actual comic.
Well, no, because it's still a comic. It's still a story told through a sequential series of events.
No, but you understand what I'm saying. You know, like you get those picture books where you have the big kind of painterly thing and then there's the text just kind of at the bottom or along the side or something like that that just tells you what's in the picture. Or tells you what's going on.
Yeah, like, I mean,
that, like that story like, from the Dark North that I did a few weeks back.
Yeah, like the Dark North, yeah.
I guess, but that's probably just for me not explaining. But this is very much just, it's a comic.
Yeah.
But you could tell it's a comic that's focused less on like character moments and more on just kind of big spectacles.
Okay, yeah, I kind of get it, yeah.
All right, then we've also got Tales of Suspense, which is written by James Robinson with art by Colin McNeil. I think this is probably the one I liked the least, mainly because the story's complete. It's complete rubbish.
Okay.
Captain America and Iron Man both get sent on a mission to find out about a secret organization by Nick Fury, but Nick Fury also doesn't tell each one of them that the others work in the case because he's kind of a jerk sometimes like that. That's just—it's a very generic. Oh, we don't get along, but we've got to team up to stop the generic bad guys from doing the generic bad guy thing.
Ah, yeah.
It was just kind of a shame because the art is really good. It actually reminds me a lot of, you know, that painting Nighthawks with, you know, like the guy sitting in the bar.
Yes. Ah, yes, Edward Hopper.
Yeah, reminds me a lot of that, which is kind of the lots of very moody colours and silhouetted outlines. But it does also have a bit where literally the main villain just explains what his plot is to Captain America while he's tied to a chair. Oh, that being said, though, that there is one line that I feel like I must read out because it proves once and for all that Captain America and Iron Man are definitely kind of a couple just going through a rough patch. So our heroes have met. We cut to Tony Stark's inner monologue. Captain America, Steve, I look at your handsome face into your clear azure eyes. Does ever I feel the same guilty envy. Like, it's insane. Because this isn't a comic where you can kind of say, oh, it's like Captain America and Iron Man are a couple, isn't that funny? This is a comic where I don't know how anyone could not read it as Captain America and Iron Man just really want to put aside the differences and go at it.
Maybe Nick Fury knows that. That's why he sent them both on the mission without telling each other.
He's setting them up.
Yeah, it's like a blind date.
I really want to read Nick Fury's Superhero Matchmaker now.
I was literally thinking exactly the same thing. Maybe that's what S.H.I.E.L.D. is. It's just a matchmaking service for superheroes.
Well, in fairness, at various times it does seem like it's a matchmaking agency for Black Widow.
This is true. And maybe the supervillains were originally superheroes, but they got dumped. But they're like the stalker ex-boyfriend, which is why they're always obsessing and... They're always obsessing over... And look at Doc Octopus. He's always obsessing over Spider-Man's aren't they?
See, this puts the whole Doctor Doom Mr. Fantastic rivalry in a whole new light.
Well, yeah, they were fine. They were best buds until Susan turned up.
It's all your fault, Sue Storm, you damn homewrecker.
Exactly.
They could have had a life together.
Yes, making fantastic inventions so they could cruise across dimensions.
And then there'd be the endless bickering between, no, I want to save humanity, no, I want to end humanity, no, I want to save humanity, no, I want to end humanity. You never let me use my creations for what I designed them for. Yeah. I don't think the Victor Doom and Reed Richards relationship was undoomed.
I don't know, I can see Reed Richards seeing Dr. Doom wanting to kill all of humanity. It's just a fun quirk.
Oh my god. Maybe.
Like, no, Victor, another death ray, you scamp.
Oh, no, maybe that line from Fanfostic was his come to bed line. You know, there is no Victor, only Doom.
Or Reed talking to his mum. Yes, I know that Victor tends to have this death ray obsession, but on the plus side, he's an angel in the kitchen.
Exactly. You should try his fairy cakes.
His creme brulee torched with the death ray is just to die for.
Oh, anyway, I'm sorry, we're deviating wildly from...
Well, that's not like us.
No, these really are tales to astonish that we're coming up with.
No, I'm just going to leave that. You read Richard's mother's going... Well, he's a supervillain, but at least he's a doctor.
Exactly. It's all a mother could really hope for.
Exactly. He's going to marry well.
Anyway, now that we're done definitely fixing the Marvel Universe, final story in this is Strange Tales, which is written by Kurt Busiek and with art by Ricardo Villagran. And this was definitely my favourite of the three. Mainly because it starts with Nick Fury kind of doing his whole Nick Fury thing of fighting the Yellow Claw on an orbiting death base, fighting rats armed with machine guns, only to reveal that this is all the story he's telling to the Thing and the Human Torch at their weekly poker game. And the Thing just says, oh, you think that's a story? Now we've got a story. And it's this whole crazy thing of like the Thing and the Human Torch team up with Wyatt Wimfoot to hunt down a ghost wolf, only it turns out the ghost wolf shouldn't exist, and when they go to where it is, it isn't there. And then within the flashback, like, then the Human Torch says, you know, this reminds me of this one time. And then, like, you get another story about the Thing and the Human Torch fighting alligators in the sewers underneath New York, but then the alligators attack them in the desert, only for Doctor Strange to show up and go, you know, this reminds me of something that happened one time. It's all these stories within stories.
See, you're saying this, but while you're saying this, I just keep remembering, American Pie, where you had Alison Hannigan just going, this one time at band camp,
I mean, this is absolutely this one time at Bandcamp. But also, more importantly, features an appearance by classic Marvel monster Orgo the Unconquerable.
Oh, wow.
That's a big claim, isn't it?
It is. And one that, spoiler alert, he doesn't back up.
Yeah. I was about to say, Mick, you may want to check the vault and see if he has actually been conquered.
But the vault's a long way away. It's very heavy and, well, it's not that far away, but it's behind stuff.
Sounds too much like work, in other words.
It would involve more effort than buying tickets to go see Black Panther.
Okay.
And Andrew will tell you how hard that is.
Yes, it's so difficult. You don't have to like go on a website and click some buttons and it's much easier to just read Strange Tales and love the incredibly fun story, which also, like all these stories within stories, it turns out they all have a point that ties together quite nicely at the end. And also, again, the art is really nice.
Awesome.
It kind of looks like all sort of Jim Steranko, Jack Kirby-esque comic, but done in like a more photorealistic way. It's really good. You should read it.
Excellent. My turn then, is it?
Yep, your turn.
Yep.
Right. I have something from Dragon Age, from the Dragon Age universe, called Knight Errant, which is it's unusual because it kind of. I'm going to start off with the artwork because the artwork is worth talking about. It's got really, really nice, very, very, very detailed and very colourful artwork, and it's got character models based on the characters from the game. So there's a lot of different faces, lots of different expressions, lots of violence, lots of blood, lots of great costumes. It's very, very good to read. But the nice thing about it is it's, because it's set in the Dragon Age universe, because it's set on that world, it's actually, you've got characters in there that if you've played the games, you're going to be familiar with, and places that you're going to be familiar with. Varric, the dwarf, turns up in this. He's going to become a Viscount, and he's in Kirkwall, which is the setting for Dragon Age 2, which a lot of people didn't like, but I thought Dragon Age 2 was an amazing game. And this is basically following on from the third game, Dragon Age Inquisition, and it follows on from several other short Dragon Age runs that are related to it, and it's all about kind of how the Inquisition is fighting against this huge darkness, and they're recruiting talent left, right, and center. And in this one, the story is about the drunken knight, Sir Aaron Hawthorne, and his elven squire, Vaya. Now, Vaya is female, a female elf, a female dark elf, and the cover has her on the front. And I want to point this out. Whoever designed the cover, I get what you're going for, but it really looks like somebody just lifted a clump of mud and a plant out of the ground and threw it at the side of her head, because that's the effect I've got. Because it's basically a tree, her in profile, and then a tree uprooted from the earth just in front of it.
Picture the poster for Adaptation, but with Dragon Age characters. It's not that.
It's not that, but it could have been. It could have been.
So here's a bit of trivia, because you listed all the stuff that it follows on from.
Yeah.
Does it also follow on, because I don't know whether this is canon, and I stumbled across it the other day.
Yeah.
There's a web series based on Dragon Age starring the queen of genre geekdom, Felicia Day.
I don't know.
As an elven assassin.
Yeah, I don't know if that's actually canon.
I mean, it's made in association with BioWare.
If it's made in association with BioWare, then it's canon, I'd say. This is definitely made in association with BioWare. This is Dark Horse and BioWare. And the thing is, this is kind of a testament. The fact that you've got this many additional stories to Dragon Age is kind of a testament to the strength of the writing in the games themselves, and the strength to the it's a testament to the strength of the world building in the games. The fact that they can actually do graphic novels like this. And this is just random characters who you don't know, you've never met them. But if you've played the games, they're automatically familiar because you know the world. They refer to things within the world. And yes, sometimes they give you a brief description as to what it's relating to. But when they talk about Tevinter Mages, you know what they're talking about. You don't need an explanation because you played the games. And this is very much one for fans of the games. The locations are things that you're familiar with. the characters. So, you know, Aaron Hawthorne, he's a drunk knight, but you've seen drunk knights in the game before. So, again, he's familiar. Vaya is actually a very good character. And Aaron Hawthorne is nowhere near as drunk as he might seem. He is surprising because of exactly how deep he actually is without you realizing it. He kind of grows on you. He plays the part of the bumbling fool very, very well. Vaya, as I said, is a great character. I absolutely adore her. I think she's really good. But this does portray the Inquisition as having its spreading its reach all over to try and combat the evil that's invading the world. And the Inquisition is always watching, is the message in this. The Inquisition is always watching, and if you want to help, then you can. But yeah, Dragon Age Knight Errant, I would recommend it to any fan of Dragon Age. It's a very good addition. Over to you, Mick.
Over to me. So I have got a hardback edition from Humanoids of Robert Silverberg's Downwards to the Earth, as adapted by Philip Thoreau and Laura Zuckery. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with his work, Robert Silverberg is one of those giants of sci-fi that you've never heard of. So his work litters the pages of all those fantastic stories, Science Fiction Quarterly, all those little sort of short story magazines. There's a couple of novels in there as well. As far as I'm aware, none of them have been adapted into movies, but certainly they have inspired a lot of things. And if I was going to sum this up, this particular graphic novel in a sentence, I would say Avatar, but done properly.
Okay.
Do you mean Avatar, the teens controlling elements, or Avatar, the big blue furry cat people?
Well, neither. I'm talking about the essential plot of Avatar, which is a warning against colonialism.
Okay, but no, I mean, you meant that Avatar.
I meant that Avatar, yes.
All right, so you're on about Pocahontas then.
There's no airbending going on in here. And it's no, because it's not that pale a copy of everything that's gone before it, with some shiny blue aliens in it. This is proper science fiction. This is a proper post-colonial visit to an alien world. The artwork is pretty darn stunning, it has to be said. It's not quite the ornate painted artwork that you've described, Andrew, but it is a step above your standard comic book sort of primary colours. There's a lot of soft tones, a lot of soft shading, very clear outlines. There's some very familiar looking concepts that have been drawn. So there's a couple of Porter androids that look very similar to some of the some of the robots in the prequels to Star Wars, but they're not similar enough that you think, oh, what a ripoff.
Yeah.
They just remind you a bit of it. But when you start looking at the frames that are set in the various landscapes that are available on Holman's World, as it was called under colonial rule, it's gorgeous. I mean, it really brings the planet's surface to life. There's a variance to the landscapes as you move from region to region. There's a crystal forest that looks superb. And all the characters, the individual characters are drawn really well. There's never any chance for you mistaking, even the most insignificant characters for someone else. There's an attention to detail on the various species that inhabit the world that is fantastic. And all that artwork doesn't distract you from the fact that it's absolutely a ripping story as well. So the basic premise is that 8-9 years ago, when the world was called Holman's World and was part of the Terran Empire or Terran Federation or whatever it's called, that's not very clear. But basically it was colonized by humans, and Lieutenant Eddie Gunderson was stationed on Holman's World, and a series of incidents occurred, which you get told in flashback, but they are quite crucial to the plot, so I'm not going to go into any detail here. But ultimately, he got sent home in disgrace. In the meantime, it's been discovered that two of the species that they basically used as sort of pack animals were in fact sentient. So they're now no longer a colony world. It's returned to its previous name of Belzagor. It's flourishing. There are very severe restrictions placed on where humans can visit. So on the one hand, you look at the fallout on individuals of coming from being colonizers to being not unwelcome, but not trusted visitors back to these worlds. You've got the exploration of a species trying to guard itself from external interference because it knows what's happened in the past. And then you've got the intricacies of an alien life cycle as well. And what happened, their mating rituals, their reproductive cycles, their religious beliefs, etc. And it starts off, you start thinking, what's going on here? If he hates the planet so much, why is he going back? Is he just doing it for the money? Is he actually doing it for love? What's going on? And it's all things to all men. It's a love story. It's a sci-fi action adventure. It's a quest. It's a David Attenborough style documentary, if you like. And it's a constant voyage of discovery right up to the very last frame. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was literally one of those where if you had to put it down, you couldn't wait till the next time you got 5 minutes to pick it back up again. There's a trippy scene when they do a sort of religious festival on the planet, which is they've not used the artwork to over psychedelize it. And that is a word because I've just said it. So it's not like you sometimes get in comics when they're trying to get across that it's a mystical experience that people are undergoing. This just gives you the impression of floating, in some kind of sort of watery void. There's not 15,000 colors all vying for attention. It's done quite subtly. And it contrasts nicely with the sort of desert arena that the ceremony is taking place in. So I thoroughly recommend it.
Excellent.
I think Nick might have liked that one.
Yeah.
I did enjoy that one. It might not find its way back on Saturday.
It better, because I want to read it.
No.
No, we will tackle you, Mick, for it.
Only if I have it with me.
Rob will tackle you and I'll probably kind of watch or something.
Only if I have it with me.
We'll just follow you home.
Because if I haven't got it with me and you tackle me, that puts you on a register.
I've been reading Hellboy and the BPRD 1954.
Tell us about it.
This is kind of, it's a series of sort of short stories and a sequel to Hellboy and the BPRD 1953, which came out, a couple of years ago. And, you know, both series chronicle Hellboy's early adventures as part of the BPRD investigating spooky gubbins, okay. which is their official reason for existing. So, there's four stories in this one. There's Black Sun, The Unreasoning Beast, Ghost Moon, and The Mirror. And the first three are written by Mike Vignola and Chris Robertson, with The Mirror's just written by Mike Vignola. And Black Sun has art by Stephen Green, Unreasoning Beast has art by Patrick Reynolds, Ghost Moon has art by Brian Chirilla, and The Mirror has art by Richard Corbin.
Okay.
And yeah, I'll just be quick about this one, because I think there's not much to say other than they're a lot of fun. Basically, it's Hellboy kind of at its most pure, which is just, you know, Hellboy goes to a place, spooky thing happens, he has to deal with it, and they're good short horror stories. And also in one of them, Hellboy gets kidnapped by a UFO, but then it turns out it was actually piloted by Nazis.
Okay.
And I just kind of I want to cut out and just use the panel of Hellboy seeing a bunch of Nazis and going, oh, these guys again.
Bloody moon Nazis.
You see, I'm starting to think now there are so many works of fiction that talk about moon Nazis, it's kind of got to be a thing. In that No Smoke Without
Fire. Despite the laws of averages.
Yeah, there's that old No Smoke Without Fire thing, isn't there? You know.
True, there's no moon Nazis without moon truth.
Which is going to be the title of my next album.
What I also really like about this series, what I think kind of sets it apart from just kind of the original Hellboy series, it's fun to see him like with a full supporting cast of just normal people. Like the original Hellboy stories focused on more him teaming up with other monsters like Abe Sapien and Liz Sherman.
Yeah.
But I like that he's got kind of human friends in this. We've got Susan Zhang, who is kind of a Chinese, well, her parents were Chinese immigrants, and she's kind of grew up in San Francisco. And also there's the scientist Woodrow Ferrier, who is African-American. And I like that they've got characters like this. It actually kind of highlights the social, just social badness of that time. But like Woodrow is trying to warn a whole community of scientists that, you know, there's a monster out there that's going to kill them, and they won't listen because they're not going to take orders from someone of his skin color.
I don't know why I say that.
Yeah, I think it works as quite a harsh metaphor that people are more willing to accept Hellboy than just a black guy.
Yeah.
But they're not on the lighter side. It's also got Hellboy punching moon Nazis and ghost monkeys.
Ghost monkeys.
Yeah, Hellboy in the BPRD, 1954. Top-notch Hellboying.
Fantastic. So, my turn, yeah?
It is your turn to bring us on home.
Right. It's kind of appropriate because I've got Iceman thawing out, which I believe is volume one of the latest Iceman run. I can't remember which issues this is because I haven't checked, but this is picking up with Bobby Drake trying to register with a dating website called Single Not Stirred.
And also, I believe this is us continuing our fun tradition of bringing you all the hottest news on Marvel's fresh series that have already been cancelled before we've had time to talk about them.
Yes, yes. And I kind of, the thing is, we've mentioned it before that this has already been cancelled, and I kind of have to question why, right? This is basically talking about Bobby trying to cope with the fact that he is, that he's got a younger version of himself who's a lot more hip and with it and seems to be much freer than he ever was. He is gay and he's trying to cope with that, and he's trying to cope with his parents and forever trying to, kind of make peace with just the world around him. But in the middle of all that, he's forever having to play the big brother, the protector, the teacher to all of these younger mutants, one of whom they rescue from a literal lynch mob, and he repays them by taking a massive dump on them because, you know, he's a kid and he wants to live the good life. And live the good life basically in this case means joining another group and breaking the law. Kitty Pryde turns up, and she's obviously in this as well, because they're all living in Central Park. Yeah, that's the new digs, which doesn't violate any laws whatsoever. And obviously she's having difficulty with the fact that Bobby is gay as well, since the two of them used to be an item, and she basically wants to, you know, she wants to help him in a lot of ways. But in the midst of all that, you've got these human supremacists who are, they seem to be stalking Bobby for some reason, and Bobby, they're making him angrier and angrier. And the thing that I found really interesting about this was how Bobby is actually scared of his own powers, which I've not seen the character of Iceman being before. They do make mention of the fact that, he met a version of himself who was like this supreme ice wizard and could do all sorts of weird and wacky stuff with his powers. And that's why he's you know, quite scared of what his powers can do. And then they make mention of the fact that he can literally turn into vapor at the end of this, which I didn't actually know.
I think like a while ago they expanded it so he basically can control like water instead of just ice.
Yeah.
Which basically makes him like one of the most powerful mutants on the planet.
Yeah, but the thing is, that would make more sense than just controlling ice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because they're not separate things.
Exactly. Juggernaut, for some reason, turns up for a visit. I have no idea why he suddenly makes an appearance looking for the turtle pond in Central Park. But he does, and ends up in a fight with Bobby before Bobby throws him into the river, which...
Not cool, Bobby. You just wanted some turtles.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, what can you do? But ultimately, the thing that I liked about this was the artwork wasn't bad, but you know, the characters were just kind of, they remind me too much of Frank Miller characters, so I didn't really like the character design for a lot of them.
Oh, just art ways.
Yeah.
I say art ways, not art ways. That's not a term.
It's fine if it was Frank Miller. If it was Frank Miller, then it would be a term. You can be guaranteed that. But yeah, there are bits where, and the thing is, there's one massive picture where Bobby's parents have turned up at the mansion. You know, Alessandro Vitti does the artwork for this, but this scene, it's just a picture of Bobby, close-up, massive picture of him looking at his parents and saying, I'm gay, but you're actually looking at his face. And it just, I don't know, there's something completely unemotional about that picture that I just, you know, it's like the character has the cold, dead eyes.
I get it, because he's Iceman.
The thing is, the rest of the story, right, Sina Grace has written an actual interesting story about somebody who's trying to come to terms with exactly what he is and, you know, and the fallout of being a mutant and being gay, you know, and how that's affecting everybody. I mean, especially his parents when he tells them he's gay and his mum and dad, their reaction is, you know, first he was a mutant, now he's gay as well. You know, how much more do we have to deal with? I will say that the cover lies, right? The cover has on it Bobby Drake and Juggernaut, which is fine, but also has Mystique and Mr. Sinister and Magneto and Apocalypse. And Magneto and Apocalypse are referred to by extension. So, you know, I can kind of understand them being on the cover, but Mystique and Sinister are never mentioned at all.
Actually, I think we'll find out they're both shapeshifters, so they were definitely those random civilians in the background.
Civilian A. So yeah, I would have liked to have read more of this, and I will finish it of whatever's left. But with a start like that, it gives you the idea that they're actually taking a more realistic look at the trials and tribulations of being a superhero, the complexities of the emotions, you know, the baggage that they have to deal with, having to cope with, you know, making their families happy and also protecting the world, and why the two could never meet in the middle. You know, all of that stuff. It would have been an interesting look at that, but you know, sadly, Marvel have decided to cancel it. So what can you do?
Well, write a fan petition or something.
Well, who's going to sign a fan petition for? Well, actually, no. All of those people who want the Joker to be gay, you have an actual gay character here, and Marvel cancelled the run. So why don't you do a petition about that?
Because clearly they're DC fans, not Marvel fans.
Which actually, that reminds me of a new story we didn't cover the other week. So Marvel got nominated for quite a few of the GLAAD Awards, which are awards for gay and lesbian representation in comics.
Yeah.
And they were all for characters and series that Marvel have now cancelled and had cancelled at the time of them receiving the awards.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
That's a bit orcs, Marvel. Yes. It's a bit totes orcs.
Yes, it is. Ooh.
Maybe don't do stuff like that.
Especially not right before an award ceremony.
Or maybe just don't dump all your diverse characters in, like, the D-list titles that no one's going to buy.
And we know why they dumped them all, because of the whole palaver with the guy who brought in these characters in the first place. What's his face? You know, the one who faked that artist writer thing.
Oh, yeah, C.B. Cebulski.
Yeah, that's him, yeah.
I don't think he did bring them in. I think that was still Axel Alonso, the guy who got fired.
Was it Axel Alonso?
I think so. I think it's part of Marvel's, hey, we're going to introduce a bunch of new and diverse heroes, but what if also we keep all the old heroes as well and make them the main focus? But it's okay, because people are made of money, and so we'll buy all our series. Oh, no, wait, no, they haven't. Let's cancel everything.
Hang on. Is Marvel secretly owned by Donald Trump?
It is owned by Ike Perlmutter, who is one of Donald Trump's board of advisors.
That's beginning to explain a lot. Who owns DC?
It's Warner Brothers, isn't it?
Yeah, I assume it is.
Warner Brothers.
Hmm.
I knew there was a reason I like Image so much.
Probably all the ways they're not terrible.
Exactly. And Dark Horse as well.
They're good. Image and Dark Horse, you guys are all right.
Yeah. Boom Studios.
DC Marvel, get back in your corner.
Yeah, Boom Studios as well. Boom Studios do some good stuff.
Oh, yeah, lovely Boom Studios.
And IDW. You know, I've always got time for IDW.
IDW, good. Marvel, I didn't say you can turn around. Face that corner again. I'm watching you too.
I've seen some good things from Aftershock as well.
Yeah, Aftershock have been doing some good stuff. There's loads of good comic book publishers out there. And
yes, DC, that's right. We are praising these ones. Maybe if you behave, you'd get the ice cream and sweets as well.
Yeah, I do have to give a special shout out to a British independent comic book publisher called Improper Books, because Porcelain is magnificent.
Yes, in fact, you know, Marvel, DC, watch this, Improper Books, they get the special stickers.
Yes, they do. Because they also do, they do the mouse one, that Mope, Scepter of the Sun.
Yes, Mope. That's a fun little series.
Yeah, it's basically Indiana Jones mice. But they did that other one that we covered ages ago, the one about the two kids that had no speech bubbles. It was just...
Oh, yeah, I don't remember what that was called.
Yeah, and they had the one about the postman, the night post. That was it. That was the one that one was called. And Butterfly Gate, that was the one that you did.
That was it.
Yeah.
We haven't finished the show.
No, we haven't.
But we're still recording.
We should do now. We've lauded Improper Books.
That is a good point to end on.
Yes, it is. So anyway, all of our shows are available on Apple Podcasts and Audioboom. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or email us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. We also have our own Twitter channel, which is what, Andrew?
Oh, @4PanelPodcast.
You're always going to get caught out by that, aren't you?
Not fair, Rob. You know, as soon as you start doing the signing off bits, I shut down.
Yes. We have a Patreon. You'll find the links on our website or head to Patreon. Look for The Geek Show. Show your support. We'll give you a big thank you. And if we see you, we may give you a hug. Not guaranteed, though. That's it from us this week. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.